Yes, I know this will be 3 days in a row that I've been Mr. Doom and Gloom, but here is the truth. The easy part of this recovery? It's pretty much already done. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, everybody, the second day of October 2020. Good as always to have you along. To be clear, nothing about this recovery, because the economy is big picture recovering. Nothing about it has been easy for tens of millions of people. But the, shall we say, relatively smooth trend line to a better place is getting a good deal bumpier. Yes, we learned this morning the economy added 661,000 new jobs last month, and the unemployment rate fell to 7.9%. Also, yes, though, the rate of improvement of basically everything has slowed. And so we are, as I said, kind of at the place where the easy part's over and the hard part starts. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore gets us going with that.
You can actually thank Rebecca Hamilton for some of those 661,000 jobs that were created last month.
We have been hiring.
Hamilton is CEO of WS Badger, which makes organic skincare products and sunscreens in New Hampshire.
The future is very uncertain, but sales continue to be very strong for us.
Now, 661,000 net jobs created obscures the fact that 345,000 jobs were lost permanently. Zach Medford is a bar owner in Raleigh, North Carolina.
It's really tough to be in a bar owner right now. We closed our doors on March 17th, and we haven't been able to open them since.
He says more and more bars are shutting down for good. Across the U.S., job hiring is slowing down, and layoffs and bankruptcies are very much still with us. Seth Carpenter is chief U.S. economist at UBS.
Businesses that initially hung on for a while are now realizing that they either have to downsize or maybe even capitulate.
Not just small businesses either. United and American Airlines are laying off 32,000 people, and that's just two companies. Carpenter says state and local governments are also starting to let people go, especially in education. Jason Furman is professor of economic policy at Harvard. He has another concern.
Millions of people have left the labor force.
4.4 million, to be exact, have, at this point in the pandemic, just given up looking for work. This is bad because that exodus, that form of hopelessness, is really hard to undo.
After the Great Recession, to get people back into the labor force who had given up and left because of the Great Recession, that process wasn't even complete at the beginning of 2020, more than a decade into the economic recovery.
So yeah, we are going to be digging out from this for a while. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
All right, so let's talk about how deep that hole is that we are digging out of. Also, a bunch of other stuff that happened in this economy the past 5 days. Heather Long is at the Washington Post. She covers the economy there. David Gura is at MSNBC. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
Heather, let me start with you and some reporting you did this week. You had a couple of stories, one of which was about the unevenness of this economy. And I want you to sort of test my premise that the easy part is kind of over now.
It very much is. And what we found is this is not just a big blow to a lot of the economy. This is the most unequal recession that we've seen in modern U.S. history. And what I mean by that is in the spring, low-wage workers lost their jobs at 8 times the magnitude of high-wage workers. And here we are 6 months later. We just got the September jobs report. And basically, you can sum it up like this. The recession is pretty much over for those at the top, while for the working class, it's still a depression-like blow. Particularly Black men and women are barely a third of their jobs have come back.
David Gura, three words, permanent job losses. They're on the rise.
Yeah, 345,000, as Sabri said in his piece. And, you know, when this recession began, there was a lot of optimism and hope that folks were being laid off temporarily, that we're going to get those jobs back. This is a sobering number within a sobering number today. As you mentioned, we had this kind of easier glide up. We're not seeing that again as a result of what happened today. But, you know, there are a lot of factors at play here, some of which were already factors before this recession took hold. Automation, for one thing. And now you have companies sort of wrestling with what the economy is going to look like when we are able to go out, when we are able to take trips again or go to the movies, and what that's going to look like. Something that the Fed chair, Jay Powell, has said since early days is a lot of these jobs aren't going to come back. They're just not going to be people who are comfortable going to the movies the way that they were, going on trips the way they were. There is still a lot to be ironed out, a lot that's going to shake out here in the months to come.
We are in, as Powell likes to say, at the land of lasting damage to this economy. Heather, not that I've been stalking you this week, but you had a tweet in which you asked, and I think this is close to what it was, but correct me if I'm wrong. You basically said, talking about stimulus and Congress and what's going on with those negotiations, which do seem to have just a glimmer of life this Friday afternoon. But you said, I don't understand how Congress doesn't see how desperately needed more assistance is. And I guess answer your own question. Why don't they see it?
It's pretty crazy that we don't have another stimulus package. The economy is clearly stalling. The recovery is stalling. We still have nearly 11 million people out of work and moms. This has been a huge blow to mothers. Almost 900,000 women just left the workforce. They left their jobs. They stopped searching because they are trying to deal with taking care of kids at home right now while schools are mostly shut. There are just so many red flags still. And it's bizarre to me that Congress, and particularly the White House, you would think President Trump would want to boost the economy before the election.
So, David, we have to talk about the president, his diagnosis of late last night, my time, wee small hours on the East Coast. So look, it just seems to me that this just adds another layer of uncertainty to an already desperately uncertain economy.
I think that it does. And we certainly saw that in the kind of market movement that we saw overnight in those early morning hours. A lot of investors wondering what this is going to mean when it comes to the market. I think a big question is sort of what it means for the president's engagement with the economy that we've been talking about, with this administration's engagement with that. I mean, Mark Meadows was out today and not wearing a mask as he fielded questions from reporters on the heels of this. But he said the first thing the president asked about was the status of those stimulus negotiations. And the House Speaker does think that things have changed as a result of this, that the administration will take this more seriously because of what's happened to the president and his wife. But we are in strange terrain here. I think some would say maybe predictable terrain. But I remember Heather and I at the Federal Reserve holodeck at one of these press conferences early on when the Fed chair was asked, have you been tested for the coronavirus? And this is definitely the game that's been played across Washington today. You know, who is near him, who has this? And I think that it does change the tenor of the way that policymakers are talking to one another. And for those who are optimists, think that this might have an effect on those conversations that continue on Capitol Hill.
Heather, do you buy that? Do you think this changes the conversation about a stimulus package?
Definitely. Huh. If we were at 30% last night, we're probably at 60% today. And that is a pretty big game changer, thanks to the White House.
All right. So super quick on the way out here, something we talked about on the broadcast earlier this week, the idea that the bridge to the other side of this thing is now on individual Americans. As Congress debates and as the White House negotiates, I'm going to sound like a downer again. It gets worse from here, right, until there's actually money flowing. Heather?
It definitely does. But if we do get that stimulus, I'll try to be on the hopeful note.
Okay. Right.
I think people have been incredibly creative in this economy. I think about a woman I spoke to who's a cleaner. She's dropped her prices. She's gotten more PPE to try to get more clients back. So people, I'm hopeful if we can get some money flowing and we can get some stability from the government. Still a big question mark.
David, last word to you, optimist or pessimist?
I'm trying to be optimistic, but I think going back to Heather's piece, and it is worth everybody reading, I mean, she talked to some folks there who are really eking by on really small amounts of money from the states in which they live. And you look at that and think about them building the bridge to the other side, and you just have to feel like there is a huge degree of impossibility there. If you're trying to get by on $87 a week, as somebody she profiled is, it gets incredibly difficult, if not impossible. So I'm an optimist at heart, but things seem more pessimistic as each day wears on, Kai.
Yeah, do read that piece. David Gura, MSNBC, Heather Long at The Washington Post. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, well, it was varying degrees of lousy, actually. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. So to Heather's point about women leaving the labor force, one of the reasons the unemployment rate fell in this morning's report was something called the labor force participation rate, basically how many people are out there looking for work right now. And there were fewer of them last month, so the rate fell, and especially women. Four times more women than men dropped out of the labor force last month. That continues a trend we've seen since this pandemic started. And it's a reality that is going to have long-term ramifications for this economy. Marketplace's Justin Ho is on that one.
Women disproportionately hold the types of jobs that have been lost during the pandemic, says economics professor Betsy Stevenson at the University of Michigan.
There's the caring jobs, the socializing jobs, the jobs where we need to interact with other people.
Teachers, retail workers, nurses. Women also bear more responsibility than men at home, says Yana Rogers of the Center for Women and Work at Rutgers University.
In terms of the gap in doing childcare and housework, that has grown even more.
A quarter of women are considering reducing hours, switching to less demanding jobs, or leaving the workforce altogether, according to a report this week from the consulting firm McKinsey & Company. Leaving the labor force has long-term implications for women, says Kate Bond at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth.
It reduces future income increases. It reduces retirement contributions. It reduces sort of the ability to move up the career ladder.
Women dropping out of the workforce threatens to end decades of progress. As women's pay has slowly started to rise, Bond says that's boosted economic growth.
And when we lose that, as we are in this current recession, we can imagine that is going to have really long-term significant impacts on the health of our economy.
The economy will eventually bring back jobs in those industries that disproportionately employ women, says economist Sarah House at Wells Fargo.
You look at the demographics of this country, we're only going to need more and more healthcare. That's the most female-dominated industry that there is.
But women who rejoin the workforce when those jobs come back will still pay a price. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Okay, a smidge more labor market news here, this of the visa variety. The Trump administration doesn't want to let more foreign workers into this economy. Temporarily, it says, and specifically workers of certain types. Skilled workers, usually in technology, students on cultural exchanges, also seasonal workers in landscaping and hospitality. Might have gotten lost in, that other news from last night, but a federal judge here in California says the White House has gone too far on this. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more on that one.
Back in June, the Trump administration said the point of restricting these visas was to give American workers a first shot at any open jobs. So the president temporarily banned new H-1B visas for tech workers and H-2Bs for certain seasonal workers. Daniel Griswold is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center.
And the H-1B visas tend to go to people in information technology, high-tech computer-type jobs, and there, the unemployment rate has remained low.
So groups including the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Retail Federation, and others covering hundreds of thousands of businesses got together to sue. Lawyer Linda Kelly is a senior vice president at the National Association of Manufacturers, also party to the suit.
These high-technology positions are really hard to fill jobs for manufacturers, and we're competing with organizations really across the globe for folks with these qualifications.
We reached out to federal immigration officials for comment on this case, but didn't hear anything back in time for this story. These restrictions also applied to many H-2B visas, which can be used to bring in people for seasonal construction, hospitality, and landscaping jobs. Andrew Bray is with the National Association of Landscape Professionals.
In the last, I was going to say several years, but probably close to at least a decade, almost half of all users of the program come from the landscape industry.
He says his industry did try to hire people laid off or furloughed due to the pandemic, but often their jobs went unfilled. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Hey, do me a favor, would you listen to the morning show? The Marketplace Morning Report is the technical name of that program. David Brancaccio and the gang every weekday morning, everything you need to start your economic day. We'll be right back. Coming up.
I turned my energy towards writing my first textbook for junior umpires.
The things you find yourself doing in a pandemic, huh? But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's off 134 points today, 0.4%, 27,682. The Dow down almost 500 points at one point in the day, right at the open, actually. NASDAQ down 251 points, 2.2%, 11,075. The S&P 500 down 32 points, 0.9%, 33.48. For the week, more positive. All three indices rose. The Dow up 1.9%, the NASDAQ up 1.5%, S&P 500 same, same. You have probably had your fill of my pumpkin spice adventures, or perhaps not. But pumpkin beer aside, let us check in with Starbucks, shall we? Purveyor of a lot of pumpkin spiced things. Starbucks shares, appropriately down 0.1%. Dunkin' Donuts almost flat today, down just a hair. Thanks, by the way, to all of those who became Marketplace investors this week. Video coming to social soon of me drinking that pumpkin beer. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We are about 8 or so months past the effective date of Brexit, Britain leaving the European Union, as you hopefully remember. The UK is still, trade-wise, inside the single market till the end of the year, so free trade abounds. The EU is, after all, the UK's biggest trading partner. But the good times end officially on New Year's Eve, and there is a 15 October deadline for negotiations on the new relationship to get done. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has been talking to some of the smaller British businesses that are watching warily.
For decades, Britain has shipped goods to and from the European mainland freely without checks or tariffs, but without a free trade deal with the EU, the barriers will go up at the end of this year. The British government is warning of long delays at the main channel port of Dover. David Catt, a fresh fruit and vegetable importer, told the BBC he's very worried.
We put an order in this morning for Holland that'll be here at 2 o'clock tomorrow morning. Now, if that order doesn't arrive at 2 o'clock tomorrow morning, I've got no produce to load onto my vehicles. The produce has to be here on time, otherwise the whole of my business just collapses.
Exporters to continental Europe are anxious too. This small company, based in London, makes personalised stick-on name tags for children's clothing.
Hundreds of thousands of individual labels being sent out every day from this office.
Lars Anderson, owner of My Name Tag, sells 40% of his labels to customers in EU countries like Italy. He's bracing for Britain's departure from the single market without a trade deal.
What effect would that have, do you think, on your business?
There might be tariffs on each label. There might be delays in customs declaring products. There's an additional hassle. Why not order from a local company?
To keep those European customers, he faces a stark choice. Shift his company to continental Europe, but then have the same problem with his British customers, or set up an additional operation within the EU. He finds that equally unappealing.
It's a huge cost, and it's a pain in duplicating what we're doing.
A real pain for a small $6 million a year company that's just about recovered from the slump in business due to the pandemic.
Yes, yes. So we just kind of survived one extinction event, and now we have this big challenge of possibly having huge costs. It is a big problem for us.
Some exporters to the EU, however, are shrugging off the anxieties over a messy exit from the single market. Sargentson's, here in Coventry in the English Midlands, makes lightweight aluminium components, mainly for the automotive industry. High margin, high specification stuff.
Basically, every component's x-rayed to make sure there's no defects.
The boss, Mark Noonan, voted for Brexit, and he's unfazed by the looming trade friction with the EU.
All the issues that I see for Brexit are short-term issues. They will be solved.
You voted for Brexit and you think it's a good thing?
I'm keener on Brexit now than I was then.
He thinks the turmoil at the port won't last because it's not in Britain's or the EU's interests. His European customers, accounting for a quarter of his sales, have offered to pay half of any extra costs and tariffs. And Brexit, he says, has forced him to widen his horizons.
When Brexit's first announced, we decided that we had to look to the global market, just in case there was no free trade agreement and all the predictions of doom and gloom were correct. We've picked up two clients, one in China, one in the USA. They've actually changed the way we do business.
One of them is making autonomous vehicles, the other electric cars. Real growth markets, he says. Noonan clearly thrives on disruption.
Opportunities abound when everything changes. And right now, Brexit, electrification, autonomous vehicles, China-USA friction, all of this, it represents massive change.
And opportunities for sure, but Noonan concedes that change can be a source of worry. For British companies that need to trade with the huge market on their doorstep, the coming weeks could be very worrying indeed. In Coventry, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Major League Baseball was able to squeeze out a season this year, pandemic and all. The minor leagues weren't. And in fact, it gets worse from there. The agreement between the big leagues and their farm teams expired this week, which makes for an uncertain future for minor league baseball. Teams will probably be disbanded, jobs will probably be lost, and as you will hear in today's installment of our series, My Economy, lifestyles are going to be changed.
My name is Jen Powell. I'm a minor league umpire. And I work in the Florida State League. As a minor league umpire, I'm away from home for 6 months. Usually, when I am home, it's September through March. And my side job is a small business that I own called Evolve to Excellence. And I train catchers, hitters, and umpires and help them with their college videos for recruiting. And it's really great balance. It allows me to train and study and also use this platform that I've been put on in a really positive way to bring new people into the game. So it's very rewarding. This year, we were furloughed, and I was able to receive unemployment. So I just tried to make this a positive thing, and I turned my energies towards writing my first textbook for junior umpires. I've been wanting to write this textbook, this workbook for a number of years, and I kept taking notes on it. And then finally, just to like have the time to sit still and actually put it together and think has been great. The process through the minor league system to earn a position as a professional umpire in Major League Baseball takes anywhere from like 10 to 15 years. So it's such a long, arduous process to become a Major League umpire that, you know, a year like this kind of feels like we've already built it into our mentality that it's going to be a long haul. And this is just what happened this year. So I'm excited to get back on the field, and I feel antsy because I should be working. Like my whole makeup is like, oh, I should be umpiring right now. But then I haven't been home in the summer in, I would say, several years, maybe 8 to 9 years. So to be able to barbecue and plant a garden and like walk my dogs myself it's been nice. It's been really nice, refreshing.
Jen Powell, she's spending the offseason in Decatur, Illinois. On the way, one hopes, to the major leagues. Do tell us what is going on in your economy, would you? We'd love to hear it. Marketplace.org/myeconomy. As final note on the way out today, put my oldest son on a flight back east this week, which got me thinking about air travel and honestly how much I miss going places, which got me in turn to an old standby, the Transportation Security Administration's throughput numbers, how many passengers they are screening compared to a year ago. Yesterday, almost 856,000 people. A year ago, 2.4 million, almost 7 months into this thing. Air travel is still down 60-something percent. All right, we are out of here on a Friday afternoon, but not without your end-of-week moment of economic context. Comes to us today from the energy markets. Crude oil, the U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate, dropped 4.5% today. That's great if you're driving a lot, which not too many of us are. A gallon of gas is like $2.19 on average nationwide. But oil prices are real good indicators of expectations of future economic activity, which kind of gets us back to where we started. But the recovery only gets tougher from here. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.